almost everyone who enters a spiritual practice finds themselves having what you might call spiritual experience. And spiritual experiences tend to be the attractor, the thing that holds people to a practice. There are endless kinds of spiritual experiences, most of which are characterized, I guess, by a sense of otherness, something beyond which you normally have in your day-to-day life. And they tend to be the glue that brings us back to a spiritual practice, because if you have a spiritual experience, something is going on. And if it's bigger than normal life, then somehow it's significant. It has a certain compelling aspect. And my life was in many ways filled with spiritual experiences, and in a way they were the driving force of my pursuing a meditative life. I remember in the early days, I used to have what was called astral projection. Astral projection is hard to describe other than the fact that it happens to a lot of people. You often find yourself, usually, I think, lying in bed, maybe in a semi-dream state almost. And then for me, it would be sounds of like generators, huge sounds of generators, and it would become really intense, and I would usually get really scared. And then a part of me would want to move, and I couldn't move my body, I was catatonic. And the next thing I knew, there would be an expulsion, and I was out of my body. I was flying out of my body, and I could be flying around the room. I could actually move out the window and go into the world around me. I could go into my own body and enter like into my blood flow. I would have all sorts of amazing experiences. And mostly they were characterized by the sense that I am not trapped by or locked into my body. I am separate from my body. And that was a big piece of information. I do remember one time going out and realizing there was no boundary and I could just keep going. And I started going off into space. And I started going into deeper and deeper space. And I watched the Earth getting smaller and smaller and smaller until it became like a speck in billions of other galaxies, or maybe it was just our own Milky Way, I couldn't tell you. But I thought, if I go any further, I'll never find my way home. The minute I thought that, I was back in my body, sitting in the room I was in or lying in the room that I was in, going, oh my God. It's like everything shifted. The whole idea of what life was had been altered by that experience. And I would have them fairly regularly as a 20-year-old. I remember as a little boy, 5 years old, sitting in a sandbox playing with my cousins in Detroit. We were playing and suddenly I stopped and I felt that something was different. It was the middle of the afternoon, but the sky was completely dark, completely black, and I was seeing stars and galaxies kind of swirling around like wheels, like Ezekiel saw the wheels moving around. And I thought, this is very odd for the middle of an afternoon. And then I realized that the whole top of my head was the universe. That That was my first spiritual experience, and it was the first time that I knew life was other than what we think it is. When I started meditating with Rudy, and we do this very strong, can be very strong, spiritual gazing at one another, an exchange of energies. And I used to have these things called kriyas, which are sudden body movements. Sometimes they were so strong, I would fall onto the floor. I used to remember in the early days sitting on chairs and finding myself on the floor and going, I don't know if I should do that. So I started sitting on pillows, and I would still fall over, and my body would go into spasms. And all I could remember was, this is real. This is amazing. Rudy is incredible. This energy is extraordinary. And I bought into the whole process because of the kriyas, because of the dynamics of the spiritual experience. Excuse me. It got to be that I would fetishize these experiences. To me, a class that didn't have a kriya of falling over, feeling like I was wafting off into deep outer or inner space, was somehow a failure. That I needed to have that to know that this was real, that something was going on. And then the kriyas stopped. They just stopped. Bless you. And as they stopped, I started feeling something else. It was exceedingly gentle. It was exceedingly potent. It drew me in, and then it expanded me outward. And I would feel this vastness coming out of all of these energy centers, these chakras inside me. And I kept thinking, wow, wow, this is amazing. This is incredible. There were days where I would sit and nothing would happen. And I would feel I'm a failure. I'm a total failure. I can't do it. I don't know how I do it. I don't know how I did it. That an experience was the essential ingredient in making this thing important and real. So I would try everything I could to make it more intense. I would sit longer. I would not get up from my meditation until something dynamic had taken place. I was there for the experience. Sometimes weeks would go by with nothing happening. I would just sit and feel like, what am I doing? This is a total waste of time. Oh, well, I'll just sit here and be quiet. And then I would get very quiet inside, and I'd feel fairly mellow and fairly easy, and life felt lined up and good. But that to me wasn't an experience. That was just feeling good. And sometimes I would find myself sitting for an hour or more really good. But it wasn't what I was looking for, and it wasn't enough. Over the course of years and years and years and decades of practice, I began to realize that the experience of sitting was not about having an experience. It was about being. It was about being still. It was about being conscious, being aware, and being present. The experiences that I had had all stopped happening. And I began to understand that non-happening was as much an experience as a dynamic outer body manifested experience. That it was all one thing. That inner experience is not really different than outer experience, than what life is, than the life that we're living. It's all one thing. And the biggest problem for me was this idea that I was having these experiences, that I was the owner of them, that I was the person who, in a sense, could teach from experience. And then, as I've described to you before, 7 years ago, the ultimate experience, I guess, was this realization took place. That there was no Bruce having experiences. There was no Bruce to have an experience. There was only the experience itself. And that experience was boundless. It was as infinite and dynamic and joyous, or as introverted, condensed, and unpleasant as it wanted to be. It could be anything. It just happened. It was happening just like the weather is happening, just like the sky fills with clouds and empties of clouds and the sun rises and sets. All of those things were going on inside me, and there was no me left. There was just that thing which was happening. And what I understood was the reason it took me so long to become aware of the happening was how desperately I wanted to own this. How desperately I wanted to be the experiencer of the experience. And so what happens for most people in spiritual practice and meditative life is they have experiences and they become the foundation of a bigger ego, the I that has the experience. And the bigger the experience, the bigger the ego. And the bigger the ego, the more you become, in a sense, cut off from the truth of the fact that there is no one there to experience this at all. There is only what is. And the most complicated, maybe even dangerous, mostly problematic spiritual practitioners are the ones who walk around with ownership. Because the ownership of that vastness of being is an unbelievable and perhaps an ultimate illusion. In many ways, the ego craves these experiences because it wants to walk around feeling bigger and better than anyone else. It wants to feel really powerful, and it wants to feel that it's been blessed by the universe, that it has all of this awareness, knowledge, capacity, and it really, in a way, does have all of that, except all of that ownership cuts you off from truth. It cuts you off from yourself. It makes you separate from the experience. There's me and it. And the ultimate's a bad word here, but the revelation that occurs when you finally are able to let go is that the you that was trying to have it is the source of all your suffering. It's the source of every difficulty that you have in life. No matter how big you make it, no matter how grandiose it becomes, no matter how endowed it is with greatness and with wisdom and insight, if there is a you that has it, you have a problem. Because that you is not ultimate. That you is a temporary construct. It exists while you are in this body form, and if you are really lucky and work hard, you can dissolve it or let it go, free yourself of it, and become liberated to your true self, which is a no-self. There is nobody there. There is only there. To the degree that spiritual practice has a goal, it would be to become aware of that, to realize it. And realizing seems to be an incremental process for most people. Things sort of fall away, illusions fall away, ideas of yourself fall away, and this larger landscape, this incredible, almost cosmic awareness begins to take the place of this individual being. And you walk around not free of yourself so much as one with everything there is. Yourself, your limited ego self, is not separate from or dismembered from who you truly are. You are one with the great body of being, the universal body of being. That is your true nature. It is the holy of holies, really. And it's what you have always been, what we always are, and either you are aware of that, either you are living in that space, or you are living in an illusion of separateness. The illusion of separateness is the thing that causes us so much grief, because separateness is a temporary condition, and we are wedded to its permanence. And because we're wedded to the idea that this ego-minded knowing and awareness is going to go on forever, we end up knowing underneath it all that it's a fabrication, that that vast ego thing that owns all this is going to dissolve, or more importantly, just die. It's going to go. Then what? Then what? Well, if you haven't realized the then what, if you haven't figured it out in this lifetime, I guess you begin to figure it out after you leave this lifetime. But the dismemberment of illusion, the dismemberment of the fabricated sense of separateness, is really, in a way, what meditation is about. The meditative process is a kind of comfortable sitting back in the easy chair and letting it go. The difficult version of that is what the world does to you to break it apart. The world comes in and it's a hard teacher. It pulls away relationships. It pulls away glory. It pulls away the illusions of your life, which wouldn't be so bad if you weren't clinging to them with such desperate need. It just pulls everything away. It does you in. But it does you in a sense, as a favor, because ultimately it frees you from this thing that isn't real, that isn't true. Now, it does have a temporary truth. It does exist in time and space for a period of time. And we're all caught in it together. We're all in the wheel of birth and death. We're all living in it. We're all playing in it. We're all suffering in it. We're all going through our drama in it. Every one of us is doing that every day. But if you get the message, like I did in the sandbox, that there is something greater, that there is a universe in your head, that you can leave your body and fly through time and space and come back into your body. If you get the message, the spiritual experience, that there's something bigger, other, greater going on here, then that message will lead you into trying to get more knowledge about what that means and what it is. And that knowledge will lead you over time into a state of prayer or meditation or living in an ashram or in a cave or somewhere where you can look at stillness as a doorway to something beyond. Because you come to understand fairly early on that the mind will not get there. The mind will not give you the answers, because the mind is part of that temporary construct. The thing you're looking for is beyond mind, beyond the body, beyond your conception of what is. It is the truth of what is. And letting that stuff go and figuring out how to do it, how to free yourself of your illusions, is at the source of sitting still. Because if you sit still long enough, it starts to waft out. And you find yourself in this unbelievably beautiful repose that just goes, it's okay, it's okay. Just sit still. Be with me. Be me. Be who you are. The extraordinary discovery of stillness and meditation is that the path inward frees you from all the discomforts and the illusions and the distortions of reality that exist outside. It allows you to look at life clearly, through a lens that's not clouded, through a lens that has been tailored to your particular vision. It allows you to look into the world and see it for what it is. And what you will start to see will amaze you. You will start to look at other people and you will know them. You will know their story. You will know their drama. You will know their difficulty. You will know their suffering. You will know their ambition. You'll see all this stuff about them, because everybody has it, and it's right there. And you'll be able to look at them, and maybe if you become practiced in this, you'll be able to hug them, touch them, see them, acknowledge them, speak with them, hear them in such a way that they will start to be free of their own illusion. It's a process. It's a process of starting to understand what all this is with some real clarity and understanding and precision that allows you to be eloquent in its presence, to articulate the nature of being, and to understand that we are all in this together. This is a huge shared experience, that there are people who have gone a few steps ahead of us who can help us see better into the world that we're in, or who can help us find how to see better for ourselves. That's the journey. And we're all on this journey together and separately. We're on it together because here we are in a collective. We talk to each other, we hug each other, we hate each other, we kill each other. We do all these things to each other in this collective. But if you go deeply inside, you start to see the unending fabric of connectivity that holds us all together. And you stop wanting to do battle with the other. You stop seeing the other as separate. You start to see everybody as part of this singular collective being that we are, and you start, in a sense, to truly love them. You love them as yourself, as who you are, because that is who you are. We are not separate from each other. We are not divided. We are not people having separate experience. The spiritual experience is a entry point into something bigger. Giving yourself over to spiritual experience will promote this drive to grow and expand and touch the ineffable, the bigger. The idea that you can expand into something vast, like cosmic awareness, even if it's only for a second or a minute, it has such a timeless quality that it reverberates forever. So spiritual experience is the driving force that will make you want to pursue this unfolding of you. It's essential, it's dramatic, it's dynamic, but it's also a trap. And so the only thing I really want to convey is, don't lock yourself into spiritual experience as the purpose behind all of this. It's not to walk around as someone who has had an experience, it's someone who has been freed from experience by experience. If you can have an experience and just say, thank you, thy will be done, just open to the vastness of where experience comes from, open to the fact that we are all collectively experiencing, open to that, open to the idea that a bad day is not a bad thing, that a day of suffering is not necessarily a punishment, that it's all part of the extraordinary nature of being, and that at some point we're going to be asked to experience all of it. Don't just look for escape mode and transcendent mode as a sign of spiritual achievement. Sitting in your own pain, in your own disturbance, in your own stress mode has validity. Sit with it. Don't run from it. Don't hide from it. Don't label it. Don't say this is wrong and this is right. Accept the totality of what is and learn. Some of the greatest learning comes from the deepest pain. No one wants to know that. Nobody wants to enter into that. But it is what you have to do. You have to say yes to the what is of life. And that profound acceptance is reaching for understanding that everything is spiritual experience. Everything. Stop owning and trying to get to somewhere else. Try to find a way to be here. Let spiritual experience be about loving the person next to you, about loving the people in the room with you, loving walking down the street and seeing every kind of manifestation there is. Let that be your spiritual experience. Let something in you know that everyone out there is on the same path, on the same road, on the same journey that you're on. And as we all know, or don't know, it all goes to the same end. The same defining end, which is the end of you. That's the end. There's no more separate you. And there's nothing worse than leaving this world having not known that. Because you have to be taken apart. You have to be demolished. And the you that will be demolished will observe itself being demolished. That's the slow motion experience of that is human life. The worst experience of it is deathbed hell. Or afterward, we'll find out. But they do have to separate you from this belief that you are separate. They do take you back to your true self, which is oneness. And to get to oneness, the glue that's holding you into this wrong idea of who you are has to be pulled apart. And it's not fun. So the idea of meditation is really a kind gesture of doing this process now, while you still can. Let go moment by moment, cell by cell, molecule by molecule. Let it go, let it go, let it go, let it fall away. Free yourself of all of this illusion and all of this idea of separateness, and watch what happens. The gift of is that you attain a kind of vast knowing and wisdom and awareness. And you free yourself of the not knowing, of the preoccupation with your ego-minded drives and fears and joys and expectations. You just become what you have always been, that which is, period. That which is, capital I. That's the road we're on after we pass through this veil of tears, as they call it, or the veil of separateness, or this world of manifested form. Once we pass through that, we discover that we never were the thing that was manifest. We were always the unmanifest, always, with a period of time of being manifest. And one of the great things you realize in manifested form is the miracle of the unmanifest. That which has formed and taken root and given itself solidity and substance is a gift. The world of coherence, as I call it, is your respite from the chaos of the unknown. This world is an ultimate gift, but the best way to be in this gift is not to think you're a separate part of it, but you are one with this amazing thing called life. Life, this living, breathing, manifested form that you have found yourself in, or you have gravitated toward, or you have been given as a gift. This is the most extraordinary thing possible, this world of life. But the only way to truly, really have it is not to separate from it, but to be it in its totality. That's the goal. That's what we're here for. That's why you're sitting in this room, if nothing else, to hear this message. Better to do what I'm talking about, which is let go. Let go of the struggle. Let go of the separation. Let go of the drama. Just sit quietly and be. Just be. You are the thing that is. You are that. The ride into that awareness is the goal of a spiritual life to the degree that there is any goal. The opposite of that is human ignorance, suffering, stress, anxiety, fear, all of the things that go along with being human and existentially aware that it's a temporary thing and you're going to die. So there's a real reason to do this. There's a real reason to sit still. There's a real reason to enter into spiritual experience and then to watch spiritual experience become life experience and life experience become what and who you are. So don't cling to your experience. Don't get excited about what's rising up and making you special and different and seeing the bigger world. Let it all happen and settle in and just go, yes, this is what I want, this is what I am. And be still at the core and you will have everything. And the universe will explain what it is, why it is, how it is, and that you are the very thing it is. Any questions?
What do you think about healing trauma?
Healing trauma? Mm-hmm. It's a good thing to do.
How does it relate to the message?
The real message of healing trauma is you go deep, you go, who had the trauma? Who was the sufferer of trauma? And that's my experience with those people who've taken the journey where it wants to go, is that the trauma was in many ways the ultimate push into awareness, the ultimate shove into truth. People who have trauma and cling to trauma through fear and doubt and a lack of clarity and lack of help from the world, you know, they just get more and more tossed and turned by the density of that space, and it gets worse and worse and worse, and ultimately perhaps is the liberating force, but you spend a lot of time in a lot of misery going through it. One of the keys to this practice, and one of the keys I think to any meditative practice, is reaching for and finding help. And if you know help is there, you start to go into a place inside yourself that through the trauma breaks through and absolutely convinces you that it was a necessary ingredient in the ultimate liberation of your soul. You can ask, why does life design itself that way? I can't give you the answer to that. But I've known people who in the midst of their great trauma have awakened. And I know people in trauma who create more walls around themselves than one can possibly imagine and just live inside a castle of suffering. So it's kind of a conscious choice. What do you want to do with your trauma? But you can move beyond trauma by finally accepting the trauma, by asking for help to embrace the trauma, by trying to understand is the wrong word, but in some way take it in and say, in a way, kind of thank you. Anybody else?
Do you believe we're always making a choice?
It kind of doesn't matter what I believe on that level, but choice happens. Whether we have a sense of ownership of choice or whether we simply allow choice to arise, it has a kind of inevitability. And that inevitability comes from the universe knows what it's doing. It really does. We align with it sometimes, and then we think we're making a choice, mm-hmm. and we don't align with it at other times, and the choice just happens. Mm-hmm. But there's no choice that is made that isn't the choice that we have no choice but to make because of who we are and how we were constructed and how we were born and the DNA and our ancestors' choices all lead up to every choice that we make. So we're governed by all of that. But there are moments where we really do feel that there is a real choice to make. And then you have to collect yourself and go into some larger space to try to get the information or the awareness or the knowing that allows you to make the choice. Because clearly you can go this way and you can go that way. But the final determining force, the little tiny little thing that throws you on one side or another, has always been there. It's always been there. And so you can, yes, think you've made the choice, but in a way, how could you not have made that choice? So it's a combination. It's, you know, you just started today, but I'll tell you something really that I've come to over the course of my practice, and that is, this idea of knowing and understanding is futile. And I've come to a place where I know nothing. So everything I tell you has the truth of a statement that comes out of something about which I know nothing. So I can't own what I'm saying to you exactly. I can only tell you we all live in a realm where there's nothing that we can truly know. You cannot know it for certain because the knower of the thing is the thing that separates you from the known. And therefore, not knowing is the ultimate liberation. Out of not knowing comes great wisdom. but it's not owned, it's not, you don't know where it comes from, it arises. And you live accordingly, and it is a great gift to be the beneficiary of not knowing.
This may be a matter of semantics, I'm not sure, but really always talked about asking for help to surrender. And I always had difficulty with the word surrender. To me it means giving in or giving up. And I prefer to live with the idea of acceptance. But it occurs to me that acceptance means the ego is accepting. The egoistic individual is accepting them. So I'm having trouble with knowing which,
sure.
Like which words to use, which concepts work them.
To me, that word, surrender, was at the source of and the core of my spiritual practice over the last 50 years, because I had the same issues of what is surrender and who is surrendering and how does that work. And what finally came about for me was, in the awakening experience, the realization that my trying to awaken was at the source of my failure to awaken, because there was someone who was trying to do it. And at that moment, I understood that surrender had happened, and that what I had been trying to do all the time was to get rid of the thing that was trying, to allow it just to be. And it took that piece of information 45 years into practice where it finally went, oh, I get it. Surrender is no longer trying to get to something, no longer trying to be something, just allowing, as you said, and accepting the what is. But it was a journey into what surrender is about. And surrender is not something you can understand, because as long as there's an understander, it will be problematic. So give up the need to understand surrender, and it will just happen. It just occurs. You know, one of the great lessons was Teresa of Avila, one of the great Spanish saints, and her last obstacle in her spiritual unfolding was her love of Jesus. She loved Jesus so much that she couldn't let go of her love of Jesus. And finally she realized, in order to become who she truly was, she had to let it go. And that's when she became Saint Teresa of Avila. You have to let go of that which is most dear to you and that which is most terrifying, that which is most precious and that which is the worst. All of that has to go to be really ultimately free of you. And it's an ongoing journey. Even after awakening, it's ongoing. It doesn't stop. It doesn't just go, oh, now I'm finished, or I'm free, or I'm awake, or aware, or whatever. Now it's actually of a bigger dimension, a whole other dimension that you can't even understand in the physical, material, personal, egoistic sense. It's something way beyond. And then that teaches you about a whole new level of surrender. But it's the word becomes very clear. Get out of the way. Let go. And it's like that. You just keep doing it. Does that help? Okay.
To piggyback on this, I felt like I had a minor example of surrender today. That was the word that occurred to me when you were looking at me. I just felt like that word arose, and I'm like, okay, surrender, like just allow whatever is happening. I kind of want to hold on, like hold on to my coattails, but
right.
I also don't want to hold on. Like it's like hold on, but not hold on.
Well, but we all want to hold on, and it's, you know, I've described this experience of watching my kids do bungee jumping and how they go off the edge. My son Ari walked to the edge, jumped. My son Josh, much more like me, had to be pushed to the edge. And he stood there looking down, looking back, trying, and the guy who was working with him just kept pushing him. Every time he'd take another step further, he would block him from returning. And finally, he realized there was nowhere else to go but down. And he, I don't know what it was, that the courage that he found, but it's the courage we all have to find to finally go, there's no other way, and go. And that happens in meditation. When we're working together, there's a point in which you have to, you don't have to, but if you want to use this well, you get to a point of go, oh well, just jump off. And then there's like, oh. I mean, for me, the jumping off points continual because I have to jump off with each of you. I almost have to take your hands to jump off. There is a moment where we just go, okay.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Just like, yeah, okay. Just
and that's what right. It is. And then we just jump off. And usually, what you find when you're jumping is you're floating.
Yeah, it felt like floating.
Yeah, you're not falling into anything because there's no defining. Falling means that there's a bottom and a top and sides. When you really step off into the infinite, there's nothing defining it. There's just free floating being. But don't look for that, because if you look for that, then you'll actually fall into, you know, because that's how it works, because then you've given it definition.
Well, it's
form.
Almost like the holding on that I'm trying to do is like, oh, good, like this is happening. And
well, that's what
like
that's what I'm talking
like,
about. That's
yeah.
That's what happens. The yeah. ego mind says, look what's happening to me.
Right.
And then your ownership completely obliterates the truth of the experience.
Yeah.
Not completely, but in large ways.
Yeah.
You end up having it. And therefore, instead of having it free you, it just made you more of something you had. And that's what you don't want to have happen. Okay, no, okay.
Can you relate again how, like in the discussion downstairs around, not discussion, but what you were saying about chakras, and how dissolving oneself and chakras relate? Chakra is kind of this idea that you are an energy center or a sensation awareness inside of you.
Chakras are doorways to a deeper metaphysical self, from the physical to the metaphysical. And if you go into these spaces, they penetrate. And they go deeper and deeper and become broader and broader, and they release you from the material. They become immaterial. But you don't have to, but they help you through. In other words, love for a person, which expands into love for multiple people, and then perhaps love for humanity, and then love for life, and then love for God and being, that just goes so far out that there's no containment for it. And it frees you from the material, locked-in version of what most people think love is, me and you against the world, you know, or me and my kid, or whatever, which is, you know, the Hollywood stuff. Real love ultimately has no boundary. And the entry into the depth of that is chakra related. Having it happen within also begins to reflect itself without, so that you begin to have this extraordinary expanse that goes outward and inward at the same time and starts to touch on the eternal and the infinite. And it happens with your mind, with your personality, ego self, with your heart, with your manifested power center in your gut. All of this stuff just goes in all directions, and it frees you of the limited worldly version of it that most people live caught in and stuck in. Okay.
Is forgiveness kind of a gateway to surrender?
Yes, absolutely. Essential. Forgiving other, self, everything. Because people mostly can't help what they are. I mean, they can, but it takes a certain evolutionary step to get to a place where you can change what you see or think you're going to contribute to the change. Change is really growth, expansion, deepening, you know, freeing yourself. A lot of people get locked into circumstance and situation that is so imprisoning, they can't figure out how to get out. They just can't. But if you start to accept and forgive the problem, forgive yourself for being caught, you know, suddenly there's a great deal of expansion that takes place. I used to teach meditation at Terre Haute Federal Penitentiary, and I would meet with these guys, and I would go, they are the most aware people because they all knew they were in prison, and nobody else in the world seemed to know. They got what I was saying in ways that other people did not. So they had to forgive themselves for the journey that brought them there. And some did, some didn't. But if they were sitting in the meditation class, there was something that was wanted in them that would be free to be within the confines of their own life. We all live in the confines of a life. We all do. And to be free in that is to forgive what brought us there and to be open to how we find ourselves in that moment. Just say, I forgive myself, I forgive everything, and you become free within the confines of what's there. Okay? Okay. Thank you, guys.